time we're starting so late.
And we're going to go late. Okay.
I hope everyone got this form as a feedback form. And it's back and front. And it really helps us to know what to improve each time. Okay? So please take the time to fill it out and be creative, you know, try to think of some cool ideas for what we should do next time, like Rebecca should jump out of a cake or, you know, it's all Guru's service. No, anything about anything, okay, the yoga, the meditation, and please be honest and be critical, okay? If you just say, I love everything, then we don't learn anything. So, you know, try to think of things that we could improve. You can say, you know, it was a great teaching, but then also try to give us something that we can improve. Okay, anything about how we do it or, you know, how it's set up or how close it is to the airport or Paradise Cafe's menu or the pianist on the aria missed a few notes. Okay, please fill it out because it helps a lot. And we actually read. I read everyone, and it helps me a lot to improve. Okay, we want to improve. So, all right. They were talking about how every teaching that Lord Buddha gave, especially what's considered the most precious teaching. Oh, I wanted to say one more thing. I heard some bad news during dinner. That Lama Sopa Rinpoche is not well. And might have had a small stroke today or something like that. So I'd like to dedicate this class to his long life and to his health. There are very, very, very few really authentic, mature teachers in the West, you know, who are really well trained and who have a kind attitude. And there's not a lot. We were talking about bringing someone to help, or someone else to teach during programs, and I can't think of more than 3 or 4 people. You know what I mean? So it's a very, very serious thing for us in this country. So okay, send your energy to Lama Sopa. Ask him to stay. He's like one, the real thing. And they're very rare right now. Okay? Okay. Pabongkor Rinpoche was saying that Lam Rim is not a new thing. Lam Rim's been around since Lord Buddha was teaching. And it has come down to us in these great collections of teachings by the early masters like Aryanagarjuna or Asanga, right? Master Asanga. Deta Sageti Langirimbe Gyupe Soso Chumba. So there came to be a sort of a great division, okay? And you should know a little bit about the teaching you're getting and the training you're getting. You should be able to explain it to somebody. You shouldn't just say, if you're going to end up teaching it to somebody, they're going to see where this comes from. You're going to say, I think it comes from Tibet, you know? And then you should be able to give a little more, you know, history about where it came from. And we're about to embark on a description of how you got the Lam Rim, how it came down to you. And you can read it as a historical passages. You can read these few pages as some kind of historical presentation. Oh, this Lama lived in that century and this Lama lived in that century. But I think if you listen more carefully, you will find in here a description of your spiritual journey. Among the lamas who struggled to learn this and struggled to pass it on. And they weren't always, what do you call, happy endings, or it wasn't always fun. And he's going to be pretty descriptive of how hard it was and what they went through. And then I think the reason he put it in here was to sort of inspire us. We are also, you have to believe that every time we open up an ancient Tibetan book and we start to teach it, that the person who wrote it knew we would be here in April 2011 in the United States. And in 1000 AD or 1400 AD, if they were any kind of lama, they knew we would be sitting here and going through this book together. All right? And then they put things in the book that were meant for you. So just assume that somebody who could read your mind and who knew what was going to be happening here 1,000 years ago has put something down here for you. And it ain't just the history of the teachers, okay? There's something else going on here. And we'll talk about it, okay? So here we go. So those two great streams of thought from the time of the perfection of wisdom, emptiness and kindness, those two great streams of teaching, they were running down separate lineages, okay? Sosar Jumba, Bel Nyame Jo Champo. And then there was a lama. His name was Atisha. Okay, say Atisha. In Tibetan, he's called Joje. He's just called the Lord. In Tibetan, he's just called the Lord, you know. And we're going to be hearing a lot about Lord Atisha. All right? So he's important for us because he brought these teachings from India to Tibet. Okay? At the risk of his life. And we'll hear about it, okay? We'll hear a lot about it. But he's important for us because he brought these teachings to Tibet. Right? And then they'll add a section in the book about Ken Rinpoche or Kepde Lama Sopa Rinpoche, about how they brought it to the barbaric people of America. By the way, we are classified in the scriptures as Lalo. Say Lalo.
Lalo.
We are barbarians. You know, for Sopa Rinpoche to come here or Ken Rinpoche to come here, it was not easy and it was unpleasant. You know, like to come into a whole country of people who are insane with money and cars and iPods and, you know, and then try to get them to think about their death or something. It's not fun. It was very lonely for them, I know. Sometimes a lama would come to visit Ken Rinpoche, who was on his level, maybe once every 10 years for a few days. And then I realized how lonely he was to be in this country, you know. So, Sosujimba Belnyame Joachimba Gyachewi Lamgirimba Lama Selingba. He, Lord Atisha, studied both streams, okay? And he determined that he would unite the two streams. That's the big contribution he made. He studied the stream on kindness or compassion from a lama named, the Tibetans call him Serlingpa. In Sanskrit it's Suvarna Dvipa Guru. And he lived in Indonesia. And we'll talk about it. Samulam Girimba Rikpe Kuchule Sente. And Lord Atisha got this stream, the emptiness stream of teachings, from a lama named Rigpe Kuchu, which in Sanskrit is Vidya Kokila. And he learned the emptiness teachings from, he got the stream from the empty, of the emptiness teachings from this lama in northern India. Okay? Dhamma Chuachitu Jesu Gyur. And then he combined them. Okay, historically this is a big deal. He combined the ancient lineages of emptiness and kindness. Derma se jamyang ne shiwa thala gyupe lapchen chio gyudang sanga ki gyupe so donga yon se zoke gyupe kaba. He also grabbed other lineages. He also grabbed other flows, historical flows of teachings that were coming down to him. He grabbed them and he tied them in. Okay? What were some of those flaws? Jamyang means Manjushri, ne, to Shiwatha. There was a lineage that went from Manjushri to Shiwatha. Who's Shiwatha? Shantideva, Master Shantideva. Okay. He grabbed that lineage, which is called Lapchen Chögyu. Okay, Lapchen Chögyu. Lapchen Chögyu. It means the lineage of extraordinary blessings, especially to do with the teaching on exchanging yourself and others. Okay, he grabbed that lineage and tied it in also. He's like a big electrician. You know, okay, Lapchen Chögyu Dang. Sangakigyu. And he took the tantric lineages and he grabbed them and he tied them in also. So there's actually four, five, six great streams of beautiful practices. He tied them together. Donga Yonzoki Gyuke Kaba. Chowu Pu Du Temba Yonzoki Ne Dupa. Then he came to Tibet. And we'll hear this story, it's a beautiful story, but when he got to Tibet, and he saw the condition of the Tibetans, he wrote a ridiculously short book, three folios, three pages, okay, and it was a lamrim, okay, so he said the Tibetans need, here's a guy who could, you know, probably recite 1,000 pages from memory of Sanskrit or something. And he looked at the condition of the Tibetans and he said, 3 pages will be enough. And he wrote this ridiculously beautiful short piece, you know. And even in India, they recognized that later as the most important work written in his times. A 3-page work. I guess people were intelligent enough to realize that it could be short and be a classic. And it's a classic. It's called, Chanchudrima. It's the Bodhipatta Pradipa. The lamp on the path to freedom. Lamp on the path to freedom. Ndube Chanchud Lamgi Drima. Zene Deta Tate Padu Lamim Shepe Mingdoki Tane Dene Chung. Say Mingdok.
Mingdok.
Mingdok means the application of a name. But in colloquial Tibetan, it means a nickname. Okay. Every monk in the monastery has a nickname. Half of them are ribaldry. I can't even tell you what they are. Okay. I had a monk in my class. When I first got to the monastery, everybody was starving. There was no food. Everybody was hungry all the time. We didn't have any water. There was no wells. There was no taps. We used to have to walk like a couple hundred yards to this across this field to a creek. And the water was black, and you had to drink it because there was nothing else, you know. And someone would bring you a glass, and it would be, you couldn't see through the water. And then he'd say, you know, they'd say, drink. And he'd say, I can't drink it, you know. And they said, there's nothing else, you know. It was a refugee camp. So we didn't have any food at all. Then Rinpoche, Ken Rinpoche came, he collected some money in America. He came, he threw a, what do you call it? He threw a, like a celebration, right? And then, do you want to do one, can we do a little Lama Chipa tomorrow morning,
yes.
Early? Is that okay? If you're in the mood, come then at 8. Okay, 8 a.m., huh? Oh, I'm sorry. At the yoga studio? Yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot that. Dang. Can you ask him before we end class? Okay. We'll try to go early. We'll have a little Lama Chipa for it. To celebrate Easter, is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. We'll just see if they'll let us get in early. So anyway, so we handed out Chapalé, right? What do you call them? Tibetan hamburgers. And they hadn't had a nutritious meal for months, you know. And then we made everybody the most delicious Tibetan dish. And we handed out hundreds of them, you know. And that's called, say, Chapalé. So anyway, then after the talk, they had a, what do you call it? They had a debate performance to honor Rinpoche. And the star students of each class got up and debated. So one of my classmates got up and you're supposed to, you're supposed to defend a point with logic, and then you're supposed to defend a point with scripture. And the way you defend a point with scripture is, okay, which means the great and glorious Kirtidamba Dage has said that it's true. You know? So he's up there and he's like, Keshin Tubatame Dharma Kege, Shapale! And then, instead of saying, he so stated, he said, Shapale! Because he hadn't had a Shapale for probably years. And his mind was on the Shapale. So for the rest of his life, his Mingdok was
Shapale.
Just one slip at age 20. And he's called Shapale. That happens in the monastery. I'm not going to tell you my name. It's really bad. Anyway, I have like three actually, and they're all bad. So anyway, so this book got nicknamed Lamrim. So that's not so bad. Okay. Notice how I changed the subject. Lamrim Mindoki, Tani Denechon. It's from those days that the word Lamrim started to be used. The nickname Lamrim. Okay. De chinche taju gibe cho chik de yin mu. Deyan de diki wangi. So we can say that, it was from those days that these two great streams of practice were joined together up to the current time, okay? Up to now, up to this room, right? But they were practiced, the Lamrim was practiced in three distinct different ways, okay? Lamrim was practiced in three distinctly different ways, okay? One was called, say, Shumbawa.
Shumbawa.
Shung means a very important classic text, like Lamrim Chamo or Lamrim Namdo Lakchang, or you know, some very very Shung means a highway, like a major toll road, and Shumbawa means disciples who study the classics. Okay, they're considered the most intelligent. They study the five great subjects of Buddhism for the last 2,500 years through five great shuns, through five great classics. Okay, and that's one way to learn the Lamrim. Okay? And you've done it already. Okay, the 18 ACI courses are for Shumbawa, and not many Tibetans study to that depth. Okay, not even Geshe study all of that stuff. That's a Shumbawa, and they go deep because they want more, what do you call it? They want a bigger toolkit with which to help other people. Okay? They meet some crazy guy, and I was in Jakarta. No, I was in Yogyakarta. You know, and I gave a talk. It was a beautiful talk. It was a whole group of Muslims. It was a whole room of Muslim entrepreneurs. And it was amazing, you know. And then, you know, some guy is going to ask you a weird question in Yogyakarta, in a group of Muslim entrepreneurs. And then if you're a Shumbawa, if you've studied in detail, you have an answer ready. Okay? And that's why to study Shumbawa way. You have a huge toolkit. Somebody threw you up in front of a bunch of Muslim entrepreneurs. And I was worried because I had never spoken to a large group of Muslims. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do this, you know. And then because I had Shumbawa background, then it just was incredible. They rushed up after the words and they said, are you coming back? Can you come back? You know, can you give a larger talk? And then I said, well, I don't know anybody in Jakarta, you know. And then they said, you know us, you know. And there's like 10 of them. And they're like, oh, let's do it, you know, come next. They said, give us a date, you know, and we'll have, but it's got to be during Ramadan because we got all of the Muslim people have to come, you know, and they're really excited. So if you are a Shumbawa, you have equipment, you have a lot of equipment to help an unexpected crowd. Okay, that's Shumbawa. Those who study less deeply are called Lamrimba. Say Lamrimba.
Lamrimba.
They use a Lamrim, okay, they use something like this. And they learn beautifully, And it's enough. Lamrim is enough. Especially if you're going to be teaching to the general populace. Okay? If you're going to be teaching to the common man, Lamrim is the best thing. Because it fits everybody. Okay? You can get up in any crowd, anywhere, normal people, and teach Lamrim, and they will relate to it, and it will help them. Okay? So it's good to be Lamrimba. It's good to have that training. Okay? Then there's called Danglakpa. Say Danglakpa. Danglakpa Danglak means the private advices which you receive from your lama's lips, you know, in private. You know, like you say, Lama, I have this problem. Can you help me? And they take you in a room and they sit you down and they talk it over with you. And it's private, personal, tailored to your needs. Right? That's called Danglakpa. So Danglakpa would be maybe somebody who was close to a heart lama, who had a heart lama, who was fortunate enough to be close to them all the time. Or close enough to them frequently enough that when they needed more instruction, they just asked their teacher. Like I used to just go upstairs. All I had to do was make a cup of tea and go upstairs. And I could ask Rinpoche anything. But it cost me, right? Like I had to wash dishes all day, and I supported him. I went to work. I worked like 12 hours a day, and supported him. So, but if you have that kind of relationship, then Danglakpa is maybe the fastest way and the most powerful way. Okay, it's the shortest. It's the briefest. It's not a lot of facts, right? You're just solely depending on the private advices of the Lama whom you are serving day by day, hour by hour. Okay? And that's one reason to be in that position, is you can get Dhamma, you know. And then your whole life is guided by the immediate wishes and advices of your teacher, right? Because you're just around them all the time. Okay? So that's Dhammakpa. So those are three types of practice that developed with regard to the Lamrim. Okay, some people went deeper. They added more texts. Some people just went straight to the Lamrim. Some people kind of put the books up on the shelf and just listened to what their teacher had to say. Okay, and they all have advantages, right? I think the last one is the fastest and the most powerful. The first one is the best if you're going to be going to Yogyakarta or some unexpected place, and somebody's going to ask you a weird question that you didn't think of. And then maybe the middle one is good if you're going to be teaching normal people in a normal setting, like a Dharma center or something like that. Lamrim is good. What's even better than each one? Be able to do all three. Okay? Like be able to give all three presentations is the best. Okay? And then to know when to do each is a big challenge. Like, should I overwhelm them with all my facts? Or should I just stick to the Lamrim? Or should we just go out to the botanical gardens and I'll say a few words and it will strike their heart and that'll be enough, you know? So you have to know. You have to learn that also. You should master all three ways of presenting. And then you should master the art of when is each one more beneficial for people. Okay, like that. La yang jay dang ni chenpe lo dak ju chen dang cha or ken chen che kyeop sambo ni le de sum sen shing. The Mahatma, which is who? Say Dagni Chenpo. Do you have it there? Dagni Chenpo? Where is Dagni Chenpo? Okay, that's the Tibetan from Mahatma. Okay, Dangi Chen. Who's it? Who are they talking about? Huh? Jetsu Kapa. Okay, yeah. Okay, Jetsu Kapa. The Mahatma said, "Thoda Drupchen da Tra Or Kenchen Chukyap Sambo Ni Ne De Sum Senchen." Jetsu Kapa got all three styles of teaching from these two lamas. Okay, Thoda Drupchen, and Trawar Khenchen Chukyap Sambo. He learned how to give an expanded presentation. He learned how to give a medium presentation. And he learned how to give a brief presentation. Okay? So Nine Sen, De Menche De Sum Yang Gyupachik Dugyur. And from that time, those three systems which had been separate were combined into a single lineage. So that after the time of Tsongkhapa, anyone could learn all three. Jerebo Che Chang Radengi Trasenge Drawe Shudu Sundet Lamcho Goje Jakson Zete Cho Draku Uyen Uyenma Den Tangde Sundet Zepadece. So this is a beautiful story, okay? Jetsokapa lived in the 1357 to 1490. He lived in the 1400s. He did his greatest work after 1400. And one day he was at a monastery called Radren, okay? And he had gone alone for a walk out behind the monastery, up to a cliff. There was an area of a cliff. And then there was a statue there of Lord Atisha. So Atisha lived 400 years before Jetsongkhapa. And this was the monastery where Lord Atisha had been active, Radren, and his disciple, Dromchenje. So Jetsokapa went, he took a walk up to this statue, which is called Uyunma, okay? In Tibet, individual holy statues have their own names, okay? Like the great statue of Jetsokapa himself. Do you know what it's called? Did we say? Ngandama. Say Ngandama. There's a statue in Lhasa that was destroyed during the Cultural Revolution, but it was made during Tsongkhapa's life. And it was his likeness. I put it on the cover of the Principal Pass of Buddhism book. Okay? That's an old photo of it before it was destroyed. And so images have names. Uyunma is a name of the most famous statue of Lord Atisha. And it was up on a cliff behind this monastery. And it was like this. You know, this means Yunma, okay? The head is not like this, you know, the head is like that, you know. So it's called the bent head statue. Bent head. Okay? Joe Draco Uyunma Chande. So Jetsokapa went for a walk up there. And he prayed to Lord Atisha, you know, he prayed to the image. And he made a long, beautiful song to the image. And in the middle of that song is a part that goes, Yundeng Kungi Shigyo Tinjinche Tsushin Temba Lamgi Tsawa Ru Nebatoni Debat. Do you know that? Yundeng Kungi Shigyo? Yundeng Shigyuma. Okay? It's a very, very famous prayer that we do. You know? The title of the prayer means, my Lama is the source of all the goodness in me. You know? My Lama is the source of all the goodness in me. It starts like that. It just starts like that. Okay. Then he made that prayer to that image. And then he went into some kind of a, what do you call it? He went into a vision. Okay. And it lasted for a month. Okay. Like he didn't come out of it for a month. You know? And he was just like, what do you call it? Like St. Teresa's, you know. You go to the Vatican? Or where? No, there's a church near the Vatican. And she's like, you know, she's like that. And he was like that, you know. And he's like, and he starts to have a vision of all the people who ever taught the Lamrim in history. He has this vision of them, okay? Zepadece, Lamrim Gyupi Lama Kungi Shelsig means he saw their holy face. One by one he met them and he talked to them. You know, he's in this rapture. And he meets the lamas one by one of the lineage. Okay? Chuki Sumenze, and he was able to converse with them and ask them questions. Kepa Jodrom Ni Potowa Sharawa Shi Dawachigi Padu Shelsig. Especially four lamas, which was Lord Atisha, Lord Atisha's greatest disciple, which is Drumtin Jay, and then Potawa and Sharwa. And these are the early Kadampas of Tibet. These are the great early masters of Tibet. Okay. He saw them for a full month. He was interacting with them in rapture, in a vision. Okay. Tar Shensum Jo Latim. Then finally, the three disciples melted into Atisha. Okay. Lord Atisha. Atisha Chak Chiur Shakte. And then Atisha put his hand on Tsongkhapa's head. And he said, do something to help the teachings, okay? Okay? Tembala Jawagishi. Act on behalf of the teachings. Do something for the teachings, okay? De Tro Daki Chao. And I will help you. Whatever you need, I will help you. De Tro Daki Chao. Simba. Dunki Lamim Chemo Tsombar Kurwa Shin. What was really going on was that Lord Atisha was telling Tsongkhapa, you have to write a Lamrim. The Lamrim Chemo, okay? The greatest Lamrim ever written. You have to. I want you to write a Lamrim, okay? Lamrim Chemo. Kuwashin, Lamrim Chemo Shine Yenze. Then Tsongkhapa wrote all of the sections on the Lamrim up to meditation and emptiness. He did not write the parts about emptiness and meditation. Okay. Which is what you studied already. We started at the end, right? My master plan is that we did the last two sections already, meditation and emptiness. Then we're going back to the start. Then for like 6 years, we're going to go through the rest of this text. And then I thought we should, since we already did the emptiness and meditation from this text, we'll just skip over to the Lamrim Chemo and end with that. We'll end with the meditation and the emptiness sections in Lamrim Chemo. Okay? So you'll get that part twice. You got it at the beginning and you'll get it at the end. It's 500 pages of emptiness teachings and meditate, how to meditate. Okay? And that will take a couple more years. Okay? That makes 9 years total. I worked it out. Okay? That's why it's gonna take 9 years. Okay? Chemo Tsomba Guwashin Lamrim. By the way, just to spread a thing out over 9 years means you develop as a person. A whole huge chapter of your life is spent in the presence of these ideas. A big part of your adult life will be spent in the presence of these holy thoughts. You see? If we spread it out for like 9 years. And it's very beautiful to spend your life like that, you know? To go to the gas station and get refilled every few months for 9 years. It changes your being, you see? If you stick on the same thing for like 9, 10 years. It's very beautiful. Okay? Rinpoche got to the end of 9 years and started over. And he did that 3 times. Okay? For 30 years. Okay. Chi Jetsun Jambe Yanki Tsombaku Ne Laktong Chemozebe. Then he wasn't going to write the sections on emptiness and meditation, but then Manjushri, the angel of wisdom, came to him and said, write it. You have to write it. So he did. He finished that part much later. Okay, the last half of the book he finished later. Okay, that book is called Phaktong Chemo. The second half of the Lamrim Chemo has a different name than the Lamrim Chemo, okay? The section on meditation and emptiness is so famous, it's so powerful, it's so unique, that it is given a separate title by people. They say Phaktong Chemo, okay? The great book on Vipassana, it's really Vipassana. Vipassana really means an insight into emptiness. Okay, so we'll study that whole book. We'll go through that whole book. Okay, Shine, Phaktong Chemo, Shen Tachi Kuwa Pola Tene Kyang Jinlab Ki Teri Yupar Sheso. He says, look, If the Lamrim Chenmo, the great book on the steps to the path, if there were nothing else to make it famous or nothing else to recommend it, there's the fact of who asked him to write it. Okay? Like two enlightened beings asked him to write the book. That's not bad. You know? Okay? Like two enlightened beings said, you have to do it. And then if we study that result of that order, it's an extraordinary blessing. Okay, he calls it Jinnakitera. Jinnakitera means a gold mine of blessings. It would be a gold mine of blessings. Sherso. Deyan Songjangdu Seche Gyawe Shesoki Bene Tembayin. Then Pabok Rinpoche quotes a little piece of the Sheljang. Say Sheljang? Sheljang nowadays means address. You know, what's that Lama's address? You say Kajang or you say Shejang? Shejang is honorific, okay? In a book, Sheljang means the colophon. And at the end of every Tibetan book, they say, this is who wrote the book, this was his name, this is who asked him to write the book, this is who carved it, this is who wrote it down for him, okay? This is who paid for the printing. Okay? And there's always a colophon at the end. So in the Sheljang of the Lamrim Chenmo, he says something. I got the whole thing for you. Let me see. Seche Gyawe Machu. He doesn't give the whole quotation, so I went to the Lamrim Chenmo and I got it for you, okay? Due to the kindness of Mr. Dan Stivers, whose children are here, I think. Are you here? Where are you? The mom of the children is here. Okay, anyway, due to the kindness of their family's efforts and John Brady, etc., I can go look up in the Lamrim Chenmo. I don't have to spend 3 days. I just look it up in about 10 seconds. On the computer. There's like a million pages in here that they have typed for 24 years. Okay? And it will take 150 more years to finish. But anyway, the big books are in there. Seche gyawe mechung chin le 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 jub chan chu lam gi rinbe kyang tandun nam gi yi la pel ter shing gyawe jepa ring du kyong gyur chi. This is one of Jetsun Kapa's final prayers after writing 1,000 pages of Lamrim. And he says, Seche Gyawe Mechun Chin Le Le Lek Ju. This is the steps on the path to enlightenment. And it has been written through the wondrous sacred deeds of the Buddha and the Bodhisattvas. Okay? And then Pabongka Rinpoche says, you have to understand that when he says it was written through the wondrous sacred deeds of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, he's talking about the fact that he was told to write the book. Okay? He's referring to the vision he had and being told to write the book. Okay? Deyang Song Chang, sorry. Chisu Lamrim Chenmo Churche So Tone Nimbo Dupe Lamrim Chenmo Tse. Chisu Lamrim Chenmo Churche So Tone. Later on in his life, Jetsun Kapa felt that 1,000 pages might be too many for some people. And he wrote what's called the short book on the steps of the path. Okay, and he abbreviated everything into a short book. Lamrim Chenmo. Di nyengyu dang nama shegyu tsor zepe. The second book, which is very short, okay, it can be taught in an hour or two. That came to be considered. When you want to make an oral transmission of the Lamrim, you use that one. When you have time, when you have like 9 years and you can sit down and explain the whole thing to people, you use something like the Lamrim Chenmo. When, Like when the Dalai Lama goes to teach somewhere, they say, I think it must be a hard life because he rarely gets to sit down with somebody for a long time and explain something. He's required to give a sound bite in each major city of the world, right? So when he gives a sound bite, what does he use? He uses the short lamrim. He uses Jetsun Kapa's short lamrim, which is also called Nyamgur. Say Nyamgur. Nyamgur means a song of my spiritual life. And we'll go through it. It's very, very, very beautiful. Very, very beautiful. It would be on iTunes nowadays. Okay. Chumudze. Okay. Name Mindara Hansen. Nandu Yubasu. And then you can, if you know both presentations, you can interleave them as necessary. Okay. If the students look like they're cool and they can use more emptiness, and you're teaching the short one, you can swipe 20 pages from the big one and stick it into a program about the little one. Got it? Okay. Dene dedakya nyanlan to juwa mishepan juwa mishepan na jera niki shepa tamje nyanlan to kir shepa sitaru nangwe kyongyu newa duper yang good jowl. Dene dedakya nyanlan to juwa mishepan na jera niki. Hang on. Jetsun Kapa came to a point in his life where he made a note. I think it's in the Lamrim Chemo. It's in the Lamrim Chemo. And he said, look, there will come a time when people of each generation will not get even the short one. There will come a time, generations of people will come who cannot even understand the short one. All right? And he said, then it's up to the Lama of each generation to present the Lamrim to their generation in their language and using examples from their world and their life. He predicted that. He said, it's at the end of the Lamrim Chomon. He says, look, there will come a time when each generation, lamas from each generation should take the Lamrim and they should interpret it for their generation. Okay? For their own country and their own people, they should interpret. Are you hot? Are you guys hot? How many people are hot? Okay, you're not. All right. I got these things, so it's like, okay. And then he said, please compose a version for your generation. He said that. And that's considered a xiaopang. Xiaopang is like a bequest, like it's a last will and testament or something, or it's a request to future generations. He said, please present it to your own students in your own way. Okay? Got it? Sorry? Language changes. You know, read a book from the 1920s. You know, try to read a book from the 1920s. Written by a reasonable, well-educated person. And it just sounds dumb. You know? The language changes. Language changes. Language keeps changing. These talks, listened to by somebody in 10 or 20 years, will sound... the language will sound dumb. It won't sound comfortable to them. So each generation needs a lama to bring the language up to date, but not really the ideas. You see? Different examples. I mentioned iTunes. You know, in 20 years, they won't know what iTunes is, you see? And then some of those lamas of those days, which will be you in your old age, you will have to give new examples, you see? Because life's not going to stop at the iPad. I mean, other things will come. Things will come that we cannot imagine. I saw a Google, what do you call it, beta program. And the guy stood in front of the computer and he said, And he's writing a letter to the camera, you know? And the camera interprets it and writes the letter for him. You see? He doesn't say anything. He says, dear John, I wanted to thank you for coming to my house. And, you know? And it was cool because the computer figured it out based on his, and it wasn't like sign language or anything. He was just, you know, thinking up stuff. And it worked. You know? So, I mean, you're, in your old age, when you're still doing this, you know, your kids will be like, they'll be texting. They'll be texting. And it'll look like a dance, I think. Something like, it'll be cool. Okay? So then to talk about texting will be dumb. It's like if I got up and told you about faxing. I can tell you about telexing. I'm that old. And then before that, cables. Okay? Cables. Take cables pasted to paper letter by letter. But you don't want to know about that. Okay. Shelpang Zepa Shin. So, now we're on to a new subject. Let me think about this. I think you should struggle through this subject, okay? Let's see how far we get. And we'll take a break. Then we'll take a break. Maybe I shouldn't do this to you. We'll do it for like 10 minutes, and then we'll continue it after the break. So, anytime a real authentic Lam Rim Lama teaches the Lam Rim, they should pull out 8 different Lam Rim classics. Okay? A real teaching on the Lam Rim, you should pull out 8 different classic Lam Rims. Okay? And I thought you should at least know them. The names, alright? At least we should honor the names. So the next 10 minutes is sort of boring, okay? Like, maybe you could care less, you know? But there are 8 exquisite Lam Rims, and they're all different. They all have a different taste to them. And if you're really going to teach Lam Rim, you should have 4 tables with those eight texts open. And then you should be, you know, like, it should be like a symphony, you know? And then it would take 40 years, okay? But we have them. I have them. If you want, we could do it, but I don't think we have time. So here's the 8, okay? If you say, I went to a big Lam Rim teaching, went on for years, then somebody who knows their stuff, they'll say, well, did he refer to the 8? And then you say, yeah, he did. And then they might say, what are the 8? And then you shouldn't go like, okay. So, here we go. Gyalwang Sunam Gyatso. Say Gyalwang. Sunam Gyatso. Gyalwang, Gyal means, Gyalwa means, Jina means what? Victor. It means a Buddha, okay? Wang means king of the Buddhas. Munendra. Something like that, okay? King of all the Buddhas. This is the Tibetan word for the Dalai Lama. Okay? They don't say Dalai Lama. Dalai Lama is Mongol. It's a Mongol title. They don't use it. They say Gyalwang. They say king of the Buddhas. So when you see a monk's name preceded by Gyalwang, and if there's 14 ornaments on it like there are in this text, it probably means he was a Dalai Lama. Okay. So the third, His Holiness the third Dalai Lama's name was Sunam Gyatso. Okay? And he wrote a text called, say Lam Rim. So at least you should hear the 8 names, okay? Say Lam Rim. Ser. Shunma. Lam Rim. Ser. Shunma. If you take gold and refine it once, that's a ser. If you take gold and refine it, and then refine it again into 24 karat gold, absolutely 100% 24 karat gold, that's ser. Shunma. Okay, so it's the Lam Rim of gold that was, what do you call that? Refined gold refined again. It's the name of the first great, what do you want to call it? Generational reinterpretation of the Lama Rim. The historian is the third Dalai Lama who lived 1543 to 1588, okay? That puts him about 100, and maybe call it 100 and something years after Dzogchen Khampa, okay? He felt like it was time to update the language. And then he wrote the fourth. So now we're actually on the fourth one already, okay? Dzogchen Khampa wrote the Great Lama Rim. Then he wrote a Lama Rim that we didn't mention called the Medium Lama Rim, which is about 200 pages. Then he wrote a Lama Rim called the Song of My Spiritual Life, which is very, very short. And then by the time of the third Dalai Lama, remember that the first Dalai Lama was Tsongkhapa's own student, right? That's how he got so smart. The third Dalai Lama decided we need to update the language, and he wrote a Lama Rim called The Essence of Refined Gold. Okay, sorry? No, it's not considered in the eight.
Yeah.
It's not considered in the eight. Gyatso Rim Sershima. De Japa Taba Napa Chamba Lama Rim Jampel Shenum. Then, by the time of the fifth Dalai Lama, he's called the Great Fifth. His name is Losang Gyatso. He lives 1617 to 1682. Don't worry, we're not going to do history all night. Or the next 9 years. It's my duty that you learn your lineage. If you choose to ignore it, that's your business. Okay? So, anyway, 1617 to 1682. He's called the Great Fifth. He built a small house in Tibet called the Potala, which has, I think, 1,200 rooms. Okay? I don't think you could visit them all in a month or two. Anyway, that was his house. He unified Tibet for the first time. He made a country out of Tibet for the first time. It wasn't really a country before that. It was a bunch of small fighting guys. So he's called the Great Fifth Dalai Lama. He wrote a book about the third Dalai Lama's book that he called, say, Jampel
Shalom.
Which means the word of Manjushri.
Okay?
The word of Manjushri.
Okay.
It's in gray. Jampel Shalom. Say again? No, that's the book he wrote. Yeah, and it's by the fifth Dalai Lama. That's probably the most famous one of them all, actually. Jampel Shalom. How many Lama Rims are we up to now?
Six.
That's the fifth, yeah. So we have three by Tsongkhapa, one by the third Dalai Lama, and now one by the fifth Dalai Lama. We're up to five Lama Rims, okay? When we get to eight, you get to have a break, so take hope. But those of you who care, the work by the fifth Dalai Lama is considered almost a commentary to the third Dalai Lama's Lama Rim, okay? Penchen Losan Chöki Gyaltsen. Who's that? His Holiness the First Penchen Lama. The greatest poet of Tibet, probably. And the greatest social activist who walked out in the middle of two armies facing off for battle and talked them out of it. Okay? He had the guts to walk out between two armies about to go at it. And he refused to move. He's just this powerful single lama standing between two large armies. And he said, if you're going to fight, you're going to have to kill me to do it, you know? And they wouldn't kill him. And he wouldn't let them fight. And he stopped it, you know? It's a weird karma. He lived to the age of almost 100, okay? In Tibet, I mean, without dentistry or, you know. Anyway. He wrote the text we're going to study next month, okay? Debate between the angel and the devil. You can watch it online. You don't have to fly here. You can learn. Okay, but you're welcome to fly. Anyway, he wrote a famous Lama Rim called...
De-lam.
Say De-lam.
De-lam.
De-lam means path to bliss, okay? And we used it at Diamond Mountain as the required preparation for Tantra. They had 7 years of Tantra, And the first year was all Dengon.
Okay.
You're not allowed to teach Tantra without teaching Lamrim first. Even if they went through 15 years of courses before that, which many of them had already, you're required to take them again through the Lamrim. So we chose Dengon. And it's an exquisite Lamrim.
Okay.
By His Holiness, the first Panchen Lama. By the way, his dates are... Where are you? 1570 to 1662. He lived at 92, right? All right. But a very courageous man and a psychedelic poet. Mm-hmm. I mean, we published a volume of his poetry, and it's like, it's so beautiful. It's like unbelievable. It's almost as good as Neil Young. Day Japa Tamur Jetson Losan Yeshiki Nirlam. Say Nirlam. Which number are we on?
Seven.
Number seven is called the Quick Path. Quick Path.
Okay.
Nirlam. And it was written by the, I think it's the second Panchen Lama. Let me see. Yeah, His Holiness, the second Panchen Lama. So the first Panchen Lama passed away, and in the next year, his reincarnation was found. And that was Losang Yeshe. So his name was Losang Yeshe. His dates are 1663 to 1737. And he wrote a Lamrim called Nyurlam, Fast Path, Fast Track. Last one, Detar J Lamrim. Wait a minute. Oh, okay. Deta J Lamrim Che Ding Chungwa Nyamgur Che Sum. So how many of the Lamrims were written by Jetsun Kapa?
Three.
The first three. The long one, the medium one, and the song of my spiritual life. Akash asked, does that include the three principal paths? It does not. It's not, that's not counted in the eight. Okay. Sorry? I'm sorry? It's not counted either. Marti de, they're all considered commentaries on that. Okay. Especially the first one is considered a commentary. What was the first one? By the third Panchen Lama is considered almost a commentary on the lamp on the path. Okay. So these are the eight great commentaries. And then that would be considered the root text, maybe. Okay. Like that. Marchi Deshi Tengdu. Then we have Dakpo Ngawan Chakpe Leksung Ningku. Say Leksung?
Leksung.
Ningku.
Ningku.
Leksung means beautiful words. Ningku means... Ku is a beautiful word, okay? It means juice of a fruit. It can mean semen also. It means a super essential liquid, okay? I like to translate it as something like the sweet juice of eloquence or something like that, okay? It's called the sweet juice. Nectar is sort of more like a murta, right? So anyway, he didn't choose that word. He chose a word about juice. Okay. The sweet, probably Anatole was there. Okay, Nembe. De Gela Lamrim Chichen Ge Du Dark. These are known as the eight great Lamrims. Okay? We have eight now, right? Okay. Oh, that last Lama lived, we don't know when he was born, but we know that he was born in the 1400s. Okay. It's estimated. Ge Du Dark. Okay. Sorry? Oh, I'm sorry. Dakpo Gomchen Ngawang Drapa, which is not the same as the other Ngawang Drapa for whom the three principal paths was written, okay? His name was Dakpo Gomchen Ngawang Drapa. So those are the great... You should just know their names, okay? You don't... No more pain than that. Let me show you something. Hang on. What do you have? Talakapaki? Yeah, he's got Talakapaki. Where's Nicole? That's Talakapaki he's got? Okay. All right, so today the reason we were late at lunch was we went to Glendale, which is about 30 minutes from here, west. And it's very close to where I grew up and where my lama grew up, okay? And it is now a barrio, okay? There's several miles of, what do you call it? Back-to-back trailer parks. Miles of trailer parks. Poor, old trailer parks. And then there's a barrio. It's a hard place. There's some gang stuff going up, a lot of gang stuff going up there. A lot of illegal immigrants are there. Then there's an access called Glendale Avenue. And then north of that, it gets wealthier and wealthier. Until you get up towards, what's that place called? Christine Walsh? Pinnacle Peak? Until you get to Pinnacle Peak, and then there's more million-dollar houses there than in Scottsdale. So Glendale stretches. It's a very interesting city. It's up against Phoenix now. When I was a kid, it was out there. Now it's up against Phoenix. And it stretches south to north. It starts with extreme poverty and violence. And then it goes up to, like, the Deva realms, you know. And it actually, topographically, it rises, you know. And the edge of it is Highway 17, which goes to Flagstaff. And you know, the south-north highway of Arizona is there, so at the side of it. So we've been looking for, like, two years. We've been trying to locate a part of Phoenix where we could have our center, right? Where we could have yoga, we could have meditation, we could have our classes, some of our classes. Phoenix is so big that I think we will always have classes in different people's homes throughout the valley, because it takes about an hour and a half to drive across Phoenix. It's so flat and spread out that it takes like an hour and a half to drive across Phoenix. So we want to make a center. There will always be other small satellite gigs going on in people's homes. But more and more people are moving here, and I'm settling here. And then we'll do the 9 years Lam Rim here, and I'll also teach once a month here. So we have that ready. Mm-hmm. Then I wanted to build the center next to a barrio, next to a Spanish-American poor neighborhood, so that we could serve them also. You see what I mean? Because in this state, I don't know if you know the history of this state, but when I was a kid, they used to run over the migrant farm workers with trucks. If you saw one, you would veer off the road and try to hit them. And friends of mine were killed. Mexican friends of mine were killed that way. And then I hated it, and I went to work for them. I worked for them for 3 years. Cesar Chavez. And then we worked for the migrant workers. And it was hard. And there was one governor who passed a law that the migrants, you know, could be harmed and things like that. And then I heard about it. I got really offended. Then I went and volunteered for them. I went to Cesar Chavez and volunteered. And then I stayed for 3 years. And then we did, we went to every house in Arizona on foot. And we got petitions signed to kick the governor out, who had made the law, and we did. And it took like 2 years. We went to every house in Arizona. And we knocked on the door. You know, like, it's beautiful. It was a lot of fun. And so anyway, that attitude hasn't changed in Arizona. They just passed a bunch of laws that if you're Spanish-American, you can be pulled over without reason. And they can ask to see your papers. And if you don't have your papers with you, or if you happen to be 10th generation Arizona, you can still be taken down to the border and hassled and jailed and then, you know, it basically means any person of color has to have their birth certificate with them. Because in this state, you can be legally pulled over for no reason and ask for your paperwork, you know? So I find that really offensive, and I think it's very unkind to a whole group of people. It just seems very, very, I don't know how, it would hurt their feelings, right? In a big way. That's why I just feel this whole big hurt feeling thing. And then it seems to me like it would be nice to give them the opposite message and say, we love you and we want you here and we care for you and we want to encourage you and we want you to become part of our country and we want to work with you and like that. So I thought it'd be nice to build a community center on the border of the people who come to yoga because they have money. And then people who don't get to go to yoga because they don't have money, and then have free yoga, have free meditation, teach vocational skills like computers, dance, English, and then have Spanish classes there also, and then try to integrate these two big pieces of our local society, because I think by the next generation, Phoenix will be 85% Hispanic, okay? And we need to become one state. We need to become one people, one community. We need to learn Spanish. They need to learn English. We need to welcome them. We need to work together. We have to become like one family. And then I think we need to contribute something to that feeling of low self-esteem, which has been pushed on them since I was a kid, I know. There's this thing like, you're not equal or you're not real American. You're not... You know, you're not as good as the rest of the people here. I went to Barcelona, and the first night there, I went on a walk through Barcelona, and I saw people interacting, you know, and they were like, you know, and they would talk like they had this, what do you call it, grace and dignity and pride about Spanish, you know, and they go, blah, 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 you know, you go, and then I'm like, I never saw that in my life, you know. When a Spanish-speaking person comes into Walmart and you're there, then when they want to speak Spanish to each other, they have to go like, you know, they have to put their head down. And then it means you're uneducated, or you're, you know, do you have your papers? You see, if you speak Spanish. And then to see people in Barcelona, they were like, our language is a song, and we're proud of it. And Don Quixote is still everywhere. Every time you go to a bookstore, it's plastered with Don Quixote, you know. And they love it. And they're like, this is our heritage. And they're very proud of it. And the architecture is unbelievable because of Morocco, right? Because of the Moorish occupation of Spain. It's extraordinary. The architecture is extraordinary. You go to Mexico City, you see this same architecture. It's very, very beautiful and very, to me, elegant. And my teacher is also of Spanish American. Her grandfather was the first Hispanic senator in America. You know, they're the Fernandez. So I have this thing, you know. So anyway, I thought it'd be nice to build a community center that looked like southern Spain, or Mexico City, or the best of Guadalajara, you know. And so we've been through Mexico City. We have an architect, Gabriela Cervantes, from Mexico City, and her boss, Begoña Cervantes. No, and she said she'd be willing to help design the place. And we went to Mexico City and took photos of all the great gardens, and we'd like it to be, we thought to call it Misión de Jardín, like the garden, the mission of the gardens. And then there will be lots and lots of like classical Spanish gardens and places where people from the barrio can come and take a rest. And they can sit among some flowers and some beautiful trees and some grass, and they can relax, and they can have a coffee, and they can have peace, and they can be respected. And there will be libraries there, and there will be classrooms there, and there will be a sanctuary like a cathedral, a classical Spanish cathedral. And then we thought to build a soccer field, and then build a couple basketball courts, and then the whole outside of the it's going to be a city block, okay? It's 12 acres, right? Then the outside corners are all, what do you call, community farming? You can come and get a plot and you can plant things. And then there's this huge Spanish type adobe walls. We'll make our own adobes. The whole thing will be built with our own adobes. And then it will be like a classical. The inside will be like classical fountains and tile work and arches and like that. The best of Riyadh architecture in Morocco and Andalusia and like that. So I there's a place up in Sedona which is similar. And I sent Nicole Vigna and Giselle, right, Anselin, a couple months ago. I sent them there after the Prescott retreat or something. I don't remember. I said, just take photos of everything because it's a little bit like what I would like to do in Phoenix, okay? I want to show you their photo study, okay? Because this is what I want to do. And it's very similar to what I would like to do. This is a place called Tlacopaque, and it was made by somebody in Sedona who loved Mexican architecture. So, you ready? Okay. How did it say? Also, it's an offering that I would like to make my own teacher. So I would like to build a place like that. And I think it'd be nice to build it ourselves. And then make it an offering to the local community. And that people of all countries could come and enjoy. So anyway, today we went out. We took all the people from Mexico who are here, whom we met. We did a retreat. We did two retreats in Mexico this year, right? And we had a really good time. Lake Chapala on the Guadalajara side and Tepoztlan on the Mexico side. And we had a really good time. So the nice group has come here from there. And we have other Latin American friends. They're from Peru, Argentina. And then we'll be going to Colombia and Uruguay. We did some programs there. And I think it would just be nice to... So anyway, our dream at Lake Chapala near Guadalajara, we had a meeting one night. We decided we should make a new cultural entity that stretches from Vallarta to Phoenix. Okay? And just ignore the border. And create a new sort of a state. Don't let them know yet, okay? That stretches down to Vallarta and up past Phoenix, okay? And just, I don't know what we're going to call it yet. There's all these weird proposals, like Meserozo or something like that. Anyway, I think we could do it. Just ignore the border that has been drawn and create it as, think of it as one cultural entity. And I have this dream that people from China or Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore, they might like to be involved also. And that we could also reach out to people in China, Chinese people everywhere, and bring them here. I brought some, okay? To Lacapaque. I brought Huang Jin, okay? And I said, you want to get involved on this thing? Like, we can make it Mexico, Arizona, and China. And... And I bought him a whole cowboy outfit. That did it. I think they would love to be involved and they would help us sponsor it. Half of the 3-year retreat is being sponsored by Chinese people right now. And I thought they would like to be involved. So I'm not asking you for anything, okay? I'm just saying I would like to do this. Today we took all the people from Latin America and all the ACI Phoenix core people. And we went to see a bombed out area of Glendale. I don't know, is that, oh wow, there it is. And it's 10 acres. It was a car lot. There's about 20 miles of car lots that are empty. Nobody wants them. And That looks like the guy just before Diamond Mountain who was waving signs. I don't know. We could build it there. It'd be nice. So we'll work on it together. We'll let you know. Okay? But think about it. It would be sort of an international thing. I could see training Mexican kids to work in China. You know? And just go around the United States. You know? Who needs America? I mean, they could connect with China and be very prosperous, you know? If they could learn Chinese, if we could take them to Taiwan or to China, teach them how to, the ropes of how to deal there, and people from Latin America. If there was a direct connection between Asia and Latin America, then there'd be a new economic zone. And it can be, you see? And it would be interesting to take gang kids to Taiwan or something and stick them there for 6 months and let them learn something cool and come back. And that's kind of the kind of thing I want to play with. Okay? Like that. So that's all. There's no... And then we'll be working more on it. We looked at a small building. Somebody passed away like 6 months ago and left us $150,000, okay? I never heard of this person's name. But ACI Phoenix was left $150,000. So we offered $50,000 to the Sri Retreat. And we still have $100 less the cost of some of these programs. But we have seed money. And let's think about it. We're going to maybe rent a small building near there and start yoga classes for single moms. Also, the Latin American people in America, they have this self-esteem thing. You know, like, they don't eat well. They're unhappy. Many times they're single mothers. And I thought it would be really beautiful to make them beautiful, you know, like, just give them some pride and do yoga and learn to eat almond milk. And, you know, it'd be interesting to take a whole population of people and give them back some kind of, you know, pride. So that's all. It's just to put a seed in your mind. I'm not asking for money yet. Okay. And if you want to work on that, if you want to help, we need help. I mean, just with technical stuff. I need people to do real estate research. I need people to, you know, check on building materials. We have to get a system between Mexico City, Guadalajara, and Arizona where we can get tiles and materials that we need. Gabriela and Begonia can buy them. But we gotta get them here, and we got to get all these systems down. And then we all gotta go out and make adobes together and build it, you know? It'd be really fun. We did some buildings like that in Diamond Mountain. It was really amazing. Where's Fran Leanne? Where are you? She's been my student since 1936. But I remember when we made the adobes in Diamond Mountain, she came out and she was stacking it. She was like, bam, bam, you know? And if you know the temple in Diamond Mountain, that was made, we all built it together. And I'd like to do it here. And then you'll have a center and you can share it with the people around there who need a place to go, away from the gangs and the drugs and stuff like that. You know, like, be like a, what do you call it?
Refuge.
A refuge for people to come to. And I'd like to do that. I think it'd be a very beautiful thing to do. Okay, have a nice refreshment here. And then we'll do a little bit more, questions and answers or something.
Okay, we'll start. Also regarding Phoenix, there have been classes going on in Phoenix. And Rebecca and Jigme, you wanna raise your hands? They've been teaching courses in Phoenix. They need a more central location to cover the people in North and Central Phoenix. So there are lots of houses down in this area, but and those are being used nicely. And then, if there's anybody who knows a place in Central or North or West Phoenix that we could have some classes that would be nice. And we're looking at a building to rent in Glendale, just for you and that. If you're interested in helping with the I call it garden mission the
Jardim.
Yeah. The mission of the garden mission. Anyway, I would say talk to Nicole or Jeff. Okay. Okay. Jeff's kind of working on the real estate end of it. Nicole's been working on the, you know, ideas for the design, and Gabriela's architect. So anyway, if you have ideas or you can contribute something, I kind of need somebody who can do India ink and watercolor drawings, renderings. So talk to them if you can. Questions, 10, 15 minutes, okay? If anybody has a question.
Now, earlier you said about making a list of your heart features attributes. My question is, why would be any attributes other than they can take us to enlightenment as soon as possible?
I suggested earlier that rather than looking for a heart teacher, you might want to just make one and design one. It's the same for a partner, okay? Like, in this business, with this kind of training, you don't look for things, you design it and then you create it, right? So to design a partner, you would want to sit down and make a list of what you want. And we said affectionate, loyal, economically independent, or at least have a job. I'm talking about the boys, as you can tell. But then we said you could do the same with your teacher. You could make a list of the main qualities you need in a teacher, because some people need a teacher who's a nice guy, and some people need a teacher who will kick their butt. And my teacher never said one good thing about me for 25 years. Okay? Never thanked me for anything, never said I did anything right. And I needed that. I needed someone that really pushed me in a good way, okay? But then somebody else, it might crush them, you know what I mean? So, each person's list, I think, will be different, you see? We all need a different kind of heart mama. So I think Akash said, well, why not just have one quality on the list, which is, can take me to enlightenment as fast as possible? That's okay. I think that could be the main thing, but I think each of us needs a different kind of heart teacher, right? We all need a different kind of heart teacher. So then you have to write down what's most important for your needs, and then you have to collect the karma to meet them, to create that person. That's all. So I just think that in India, what do they say? There's some saying in India, the hand has five fingers, you see? Pancha Mula. And it means everybody's different.
Oh, yeah.
And what do they say?
Each of all fingers have different lengths.
Oh, they say all fingers have different lengths. So everybody's different, and your perfect heart teacher is going to be quite different from mine. And yeah, somewhere in my spiritual career, I realized I couldn't impose my heart teacher on everybody. Because we're all different, and you need a different one than I do. And you have to design your own. This is my friend Charlene. Hi, Karin. She had a talk loud. Okay. Oh, sorry, there's a microphone. They can talk softly.
Okay. I have a question for you, Michael. We know each other for what number years?
103.
I knew him when he had really long hair.
More hair.
And it's always been this way. My question is to you. I'm not being yourself. My question is to you. You said that in order to find your teacher, you design them, or you write down the qualities or characteristics of this person. Then you said, then you go out and collect your karma. Now, I see what you do and what other people have done to collect their karma, and it's basically doing to others kind of thing. But your generosity is extraordinary, by the way. Thank you very much for the latest invitation for me to be here today.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you, I know when my karma's not good or when I'm collecting good karma because I get attracted to really jerky guys or women that are little takers. So my thinking is you collect karma by becoming the person that you want to attract as a teacher.
Exactly.
So, by collecting karma.
It's exactly that.
And that's for generosity and love and forgiveness.
Well, you kind of just do what you want. If you want the boy to be more affectionate, then you have to be affectionate. If you, lots of ladies come up to me and they say, my husband's not affectionate. Like, I ask him to hug me and he gets this. and then they get irritated. They're like, what's so hard about a hug, you know? It doesn't cost anything. It takes 25 seconds. It's not like taking out the garbage or something. But the reaction is the same, you know? So, whatever you want, you're exactly right. Whatever you want, you have to do. Right? If you want an affectionate man, then you have to show a little kindness or warmth to, I don't know, to older people that you meet or children that you meet. If you want a man who's more loyal and doesn't, what do you call it, cheat on you or doesn't leave you in a lurch, then we have to be more loyal to the people around us. And if you want a man who's show a little bit of fiscal responsibility, then we also have to be fiscally responsible because they will be an exact reflection of our weaknesses, our own weaknesses. So it's funny, in a group of really well-trained people, the amount of complaining drops noticeably. Because to complain is to say, this is me. You know, so we'll be at Diamond Mountain where people are fairly well trained, right? And then somebody will start off on this thing like, I can't believe, you know, what's her name? She's such a slob, you know? And then everybody will go, you know? Because the only way to perceive a slob is if you are being a slob, right? So it kind of cuts off all the complaining. So anyway, yeah, you just... The trick is, it takes much less activity to get him to be loyal. You see what I mean? If you're loyal in a tiny way, he will be loyal in a big way. If you're affectionate in small ways, he will be affectionate all day. See, why? Karma grows exponentially. Tiny, tiny seeds planted with knowledge, result in huge results. Okay, so it's like planting crops. So it's kind of encouraging, right? That's the cool part. You don't have to be as affectionate as you want him to be, and he will be. Got it? Because the seed is smaller than the result. So all you have to do is make little efforts to be loyal or affectionate or financially, fiscally responsible. And then he will be perfect in all of those ways. Okay? That's kind of cool. So it's not that you have to be 85% affectionate, you have to be 85% affectionate. If you're 15% affectionate, he'll be 85%. Got it? That's good news. Any more questions? We have, maybe we go for short. It's getting a little bit late. Who didn't get one yet? Wait till you didn't get one yet. Don't ask me to come to Elon, Taiwan. That's not the kind of questions we're doing.
Good night. You named lots of names of beautiful scriptures that we might not be able to study, but just from the names of them, it reveals this beauty and the softness for this wisdom that's not harsh or dry. And this love between the student and their lama, their teacher. And place where, you know, there's so many men, where does this beauty and the softness come from?
Our karma has created a strange kind of Buddhism. Okay? It's our karma. You gotta understand that. Our karma, because of something of what we did, we have been introduced into a lineage which is 99% male. Okay? There are 4,500 scriptures in the Kangren Tengri. I'm not aware of more than 3 that were written by women. Okay? There are no scriptures studied in the monastery by women. There have been no women geshes in 1,000 years in Tibet until His Holiness tried to do something a couple of years ago and tried to start a geshe program. I think it's going. Okay. But it's too late and too little. It's a joke. I mean, on the grand scheme of things, it's sad that's all there is, right? So we have the karma that we came into a lineage which is very male dominated, okay? And then my teacher, Ken Rinpoche, I think he was one of the first people to teach the Geshe course to women. And then we have continued that tradition, right? But still, on the outside of it, it's still the kind of teaching we have tonight is very male dominated. Okay, then you get to the secret teachings. Okay, there are the secret teachings, which are if you practice the long rim well, at the end of the long rim, you go into the secret teachings. Okay, and we gave an example of a secret teaching. What was it? You went to the Paradise Cafe. You sat down to do your homework with a group. And in the course of the hour that you spent discussing the class, it dawned, you had this sudden instinct that the woman next to you, the young lady next to you from Virginia, was Jetsukapa. You know, this ultimate male domination lama, you know, is emanating next to you as a woman, as a young lady, who's asking nice questions in the breakout room, okay? So in the secret teachings of our own personal lineage, it's all the heroes are ladies, okay. All of them. Okay. All of the high teachers are women. Okay. And I think maybe it's always been that way. Okay, it's like Nagarjuna's teacher was Saraha. And he was a high Vajrayana practitioner, okay? So, all of the lineages I'm describing, of wisdom and of compassion, all male teachers throughout history, throughout the last 2,000 years, 20 centuries, all of them were practicing Vajrayana, okay? They were all considered the highest person in their life to be a lady. So maybe that gave some softness to the teachings, I think. Mm-hmm. I think if you are granted permission to study those teachings, or if you practice those teachings, then it changes all the male teachings. They all become half of a whole. Then you realize that all the male stuff was half. And then the higher teachings are all female. So that's my answer. In our lineage, that's... we are actually... All the guys in this lineage are the servants of lamas who are women. Okay. And we just get to sit up here in the open teaching. And that's a beautiful thing. I like it very much. I think it's very beautiful. I think that's a good place. It's an auspicious place. So we kind of decided that since we met so late, we wouldn't try to get up at 6:30 and do Easter things, different Easter things. We might try to slip it in tomorrow at some point in the schedule. And it doesn't mean that, you know, what do you call it? We're not trying to Christianize everything. It's just, if it were, I don't know, some other tradition's holiday and it was fun to do, we would do it. You know, we do that. If it was Ramadan, we'd do some Ramadan thing. Okay? It just not happens to be Ramadan. So, let's think about it. We'll see if we have any time. Maybe we'll just eat chocolate Easter egg. Probably as good. So, tomorrow's the last day. There'll be a meditation at the yoga studio in Scottsdale, Shade Boulevard, at 9:30, right? And please, the homework is a good thing, okay? Do the homework. Now you have most of homework 4, I think. You're done with homework 4. You have all the stuff to do homework 4. I'd rather if we decided where we're all going to hang out tomorrow. Where's it going to be? What's the most likely place where we can all sit down?
Here, or here? There is a grocery store that has a cafe area. Right.
Do you want to just say it's here?
Yes.
After the yoga there? And then let's all bring some, let's make it into a Paradise Cafe type of thing. So bring something, okay? And then we'll just hang out here.
After the second yoga class.
After the second yoga class?
Yeah.
If you're not going to the second yoga class, can you come here? Too early?
I think so.
Just poke your head in if there's... So afternoon? Okay. Mosey your way back here, poke your head in if they're still drinking wine. Then don't come in. Here's the other thing. So I'm not so worried about the homework. It's nice if you do the homework. I think you should do the homework. Then you can teach this to other people. You will get a certificate tomorrow if you've completed the work so far. The second half of the material will be at the Prescott Retreat in August. Second week of August? 12th to the 21st of August. It's really, really a nice time in Prescott. It's very, what do you call it? 70 degrees. And lots of pine forest and like that. And we'll go for a lot of walks. I'm thinking we'll do some fire pujas. We'll do a marshmallow fire puja. And we'll just have a good time there. Okay? And we won't get through all the material here or tomorrow. So we'll continue after training. But what I really, really want to ask you, okay? Last thing tonight. Please try to keep that practice of asking yourself why you're doing something. Alright? And I say you will become a much better person very fast. Somehow it's very, very fast. Okay? So each time you do something, like you're going to go home, you're going to get on a plane. Before you step on the plane, ask yourself, why am I getting on the plane? And then ask yourself. One day I was getting on a plane that would take me away from my lover, you know? And I was at the airport. And I was like, why am I getting on this plane? And I was like, you should just stay here. And I got off, I left the airport. And I just stayed, I never left. You know? I said, no, I want to be close to my teacher right now. And I just didn't go. So ask yourself why you're doing anything. Please get into that habit. That's all I care about. If you can't name the 8 long rims, I don't care. You know? I just want you to ask yourself before you do anything in the next 60 years, why am I doing this? That's all. That's what I really, really want. I want you to come out of here asking yourself why you do anything you do. Okay? I think that's it. Did we do a prayer already? Who was the victim?
We didn't do it.
We didn't do it?
Christmas dinner?
No. We did earlier today.
Oh.
What?
Did we? Let me pick out somebody new. Jamie, do you know? Do it louder.